Welcome to Education Perspectives. I am your host, Liza Holland. This is a podcast that explores the role of education in our society from a variety of lenses. Education needs to evolve to meet the needs of today and the future. Solving such huge issues requires understanding. Join me as we begin to explore the many perspectives of education. I am so happy to welcome Caitlin Bowman to Education Perspectives. Caitlin is a native of Lexington, Kentucky, and a graduate of Fayette County Public Schools Lafayette High School Engineering Program. She spent a lot of time volunteering and working with kids. She is currently enrolled at the University of Kentucky in the College of Education. I'm really looking forward to a wonderful perspective of someone brand new in education. Caitlin Bowman, welcome to Education Perspectives. We're so excited to have you here.
Hi, thank you so much for inviting me.
Well, we're really excited to get your perspective on things because you are currently enrolled in an education program at the University of Kentucky, right?
Yes, ma'am. I'm a middle level education major.
Nice. Well, I'm going to ask you the 30,000 foot question to start.
Okay.
Why do you think we educate people in the first place? What is the benefit to society?
So I feel that society has a whole set of high expectations for future generations to help make the world a better place and to succeed at whatever people choose to do. And as educators, we help to build and guide those new generations in not only their learning, but also them finding out who they are as a person. And most of my middle level education classes that I've taken at UK so far have kind of emphasized that learning content and teaching content isn't the top priority for these middle level students, but that helping guide them on their journey of self-discovery and positive social behaviors is kind of takes the cake on what we should prioritize within the classroom. And I would completely agree with that statement. And therefore, society knows that us as educators are responsible for helping to develop these potential world changers, which is why society at least should try to invest more in education.
Awesome answer.
Thank you.
You and I have known each other for a number of years because we have interacted in volunteering in education for a long time.
Yes.
But can you tell me a little bit about your journey, about what drew you to education as a major?
Absolutely. So originally I was in the pre-engineering program. I did that from sixth grade up until graduation from high school. And so my mind was like pretty much set on becoming biomedical systems engineer. And I was really excited about that. But once I graduated college and was doing high school and was doing all my college chores and trying to decide where I wanted to go, I was doing tours for engineering in the engineering departments at different colleges. And my mom was like, well, I know you've kind of had in the back of your mind being a teacher since you were like in preschool. She was like, so why don't we just do a tour of an education building? And I was like, okay, sounds great. And so during my engineering tours, I didn't really feel like connected with the classes. I was just like, oh my gosh, I have to take four calculuses. I was like, I barely passed the first one. I'm an algebra person for sure. And so whenever I started doing the education tour, and it was more about like, how can we use technology in classrooms? How can we relate this math or this science to the real world? And how do we help our students to understand these as a whole? I was like, I'm actually more interested in these classes. And I feel like I would put more effort into these classes because I want to learn about that. And so that kind of helped me to decide before getting to college that, you know what, engineering is kind of a back burner right now to education. And so that's kind of also what helped me to choose math and science as my core areas, because I love math and science. And I would really like to be able to teach that to other people, and especially to these middle level students.
Fantastic. What would you like to do middle level as, you know, when you think about once you've graduated and everything, is that kind of the target area?
Yes, I would love to do middle school for sure. And UK's middle school program actually goes from fifth grade to ninth grade. Mm-hmm. Although most schools in Kentucky, middle schools in Kentucky are 6 through 8. So it has a little bit of variety for me.
That's exciting. We as parents think that teachers that are going to take on middle school, you know, just bless you, because that's a really challenging group of kids.
Yes.
Exciting, but a lot of change going on during those middle years. That's exciting.
For sure.
So, and I'm not sure exactly how far you're into the practical application with your courses of study, but what are the things that you really love about what you're doing, both in school and in the classroom, if you're doing any of that yet?
Yes. So I am a junior right now in my major. And so we are in our pre-practicum semester. So on Mondays and Wednesdays, we do 6 hours at a middle school in Kentucky or in Lexington. And right now we are at Southern Middle School. And so for the first 3 hours of the day, from 8:30 to about 11:15, we are in their library doing our own class with our professor, Dr. Amick, or Ms. Cochran. And I love those classes because it kind of dives into what all we as teachers have to do behind the scenes in order to get our students to comprehend the content that we're teaching them and to have those relationships with them, which will ultimately help us improve their understanding. And then the last 3 hours of that are actual placement in a classroom. So this past 4 weeks, I've been in a middle school science classroom in sixth grade, and I have absolutely loved it. I'm about to switch over to eighth grade math. So that will be kind of the flip side of my content area. But I have loved being able to like actually see how teachers involve their students and like the different ways that teachers honestly portray the content and improve understanding. And it's kind of given me a lot of notes of like, this is what I should do, this is what I shouldn't do, like going into ultimately like my future career. So
absolutely. That's great and exciting to touch it in real world and really be enjoying it. So that's excellent. Tell me about what you feel are obstacles to you. I mean, in the national news, and you look at Kentucky's rate of teachers that are retiring or leaving the field, this is a challenging time to be getting into it. So what do you foresee as the challenges?
So right now, kind of like how you said, there is a very big negative stigma on becoming a teacher, because I know when I switched from engineering to education, a lot of my family was like, oh, like, why would you do that? Like, you're not going to make as much money. And I was like, no, but I honestly feel like the emotional and personal reward is more than the money that I would be receiving. And honestly, like, if I love my job, it doesn't feel like work to me. And so engineering definitely would have felt like work to me, like having to do calculus every day. And when I thought about it in the long run, I was like, maybe not for me. But yes, definitely the negative stigma around becoming a teacher, which ultimately is pushing more people away from the field. I know whenever I first started my major in college for education, like on TikTok, the big social platform, there was a bunch of teachers coming on there being like, I'm leaving, like, this is why, like, it's not for me. And honestly, I wouldn't recommend it. And I was like kind of freaking out because I was a freshman in college and I was like, oh my gosh, like, what am I going to do? Like, everyone's telling me not to do this, but like, I don't know what else I would want to do. And so I kind of had to go through that, like, what's right, what's wrong? Are these just personal opinions or is it like a very overwide shared opinion by all educators? And so I was mentored by a few teachers growing up. And so I reached out to them and I was like, hey, like, can you please share some positive words for me? Like telling me I'm on the right track and I'm still, you know, really want to do this as my major. And they were like, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. COVID has been very hard. And that's a majority of the reason why a lot of teachers are leaving. And a lot of those teachers are older teachers because the switch to technology has been very hard and demanding on them. And she was like, but honestly, if you can get past this little rough patch, it'll be more rewarding in the future and a few years to come. And so I was like, okay, thank you. That's what I needed. And so I was able to kind of get over that little speed bump and continue on my path. And I'm so glad I did, because I love being in the classroom and working with those students. And I can't imagine being in another major where I wouldn't be able to have like that connection with kids. So
it sounds like it's a real calling for you. And that is just awesome, because that resonates with me. If the work is something that's meaningful to you, it's not so much work. So people outside of education have this kind of general view of their memories of what teachers do in the classroom. Do you have any insights as far as what you're being taught now, as far as maybe new things? Maybe expound a little on the technology or things that you're finding interesting that you maybe did or didn't receive as a student?
So definitely relating back to my placement right now in the sixth grade science classroom, most of the students, or like actually all of the students, are on their Chromebooks for the entire lesson. And back when I was a student, like a little sixth grader, that's when Chromebooks were first like becoming a thing in the classroom. And so like I was in the pre-engineering program, and so we got all of our own Chromebooks, but like the general classes didn't, like they had to rent them. And so we thought we were like cool and everything. But honestly, like seeing how it's progressed over even just like, I don't know, what was that, 7-8 years? It's to where it's now like completely like every student has a Chromebook, and every teacher has to accommodate for if a student doesn't bring their Chromebook or if they didn't charge their Chromebook. And it's just kind of been a little overwhelming for me to see like how much that has blown up in the past few years. And I was not used to like having to watch kids on a Chromebook, like through a laptop, for like the majority of the day. And as a future teacher, I support using technology in the classrooms for sure. But I like to see people's faces. I like to see the students. I like to see if they're getting it or they're not getting it. And it's hard to see that behind a screen. And so I personally, in the future, probably wouldn't use a Chromebook for the entirety of my lesson, because their whole core curriculum is on their Chromebook. They use Amplify through the district. And so all their questions, all their tests, all their like simulations are through the computer. And they rarely do like hands-on experience. And for me as a learner, I love doing hands-on experience. I learned the best when I was able to actually get in there, do the nitty-gritty, and do like experiments where I could actually see for myself like what was going on. And I feel like through a simulation on a computer, you can't really get that same experience. But yes, that was probably the most alarming to me, coming it back and being like a teacher's assistant and like observing in the classroom as how much technology is now used after COVID. But honestly, at this point, I think it's a little overused, and I would love to see more of like the teachers still getting engaged with the students and still like having them do things to help better understand the content, like hands-on, instead of using like online simulations and stuff like that. So,
you know, that's a really good perspective. And that actually starts to answer one of my other questions, which is what you would love for decision makers and leaders in education to know. Because, you know, the entire COVID pandemic threw everybody for a lurch. And, you know, having to turn around when you are not technologically savvy and do everything online for a couple of years must have been traumatic for a lot of teachers.
Yes.
But we need to kind of settle back and look at what out of that technology jump is valuable and where can we balance things to get to a new normal, because it wasn't that great before. We can definitely continue to improve and do better. Are there areas that you're looking at in the, you know, just kind of in the education landscape that you would like to see improved?
So I personally would like to see more of like the STEM areas improved, because like I said, a lot of those have been geared more towards like, oh, STEM, that's technology, let's throw them on a computer. That's not what that means. That means using like other technology. Like in middle school, we had like a robotics class, and like that was using like Lego robots and programming, like technology to program those robots to like help use our math brains and our science brains to make this thing do a maze or something like that. And so that's when I think of technology referring to STEM, that's what I think of. Not, oh, let's just stick all their curriculum on a computer and be like, oh, there's your technology. That's not what that means. And so I would say definitely focusing more on like the STEM programs and kind of relating that more to like seeing how that technology and math and science relate in the real world, and by like doing like field trips or even just going and observing like Lexmark. I know that was a big trip for my pre-engineering program when I was growing up. We would go to Lexmark and see like how the different like machinery works together to produce a project and like what kind of equations and math go into making that. And so I think that was, that should be more of a focus on like the technology aspect of STEM education and like math and science and stuff like that.
Was that part, those types of hands-on experiences, was that part of what drew you to the engineering portion when you were in school? Yeah.
Yes. I loved seeing how things worked, especially things that like I use daily, like a printer. Like how do you program that to like copy something through Bluetooth? Like Bluetooth, like I don't even know how that works, but I think it's so fascinating that you can just, you know, send things, especially like through Apple products, being able to airdrop. Like that's crazy to me. And just being able to see like how, get a glimpse at how certain things work that I use day to day was pretty awesome to think about and to like kind of dive into. And therefore, like that's where my like math and science brain came from for engineering. But now that I get to incorporate that into education, I think kind of helped me make that jump, because I was like, well, I still love math and science and I still want to incorporate that. And so being able to teach that, I think, is kind of scratching that itch for me.
Absolutely. That makes a lot of sense. And I tell you, the passion that you show just even now is going to carry through to your students, because, you know, it's those teachers that feel like they really live and breathe their subjects that are always the most interesting to learn from. So
absolutely,
that is so neat. I would also like to get your perspective on assessments, because you kind of get what you measure for.
Yes.
And, you know, even as we look at the entire system moving away from that kind of industrial model to more of an information technology model, putting more focus on technology and engineering instead of being an OSL-RAN. But it's harder in some respects to be able to measure success in some of the skills that they really need, the problem solving, the critical thinking, all that kind of a thing. And so I'd love to get your perspective on maybe more effective assessments and where our future needs to be in that area.
Absolutely. So actually, in a few of my classes, we've talked about assessments and whether they're good or they're bad. But there's two types of assessments. There's criterion reference assessments and norm reference. Criterion is referring a student's scores to a standard presented by the district, the state, the federal, like some standardized standard, I guess. And norm reference is referring and like kind of comparing that student's scores to their peers, to other students that have taken that assessment, whether that be the students in their classroom, the students in their grade, the students in their school, and the students in their district and stuff like that. And so I definitely have more of a calling towards norm reference, because we've had like situations where it's like a teacher is teaching students that might be falling behind, might be starting, like coming to her starting at a third grade reading level when she's a fifth grade teacher, and getting them to jump to a fifth grade reading level is a big jump for her. And so that should be like amazing. But because they aren't reading at a sixth grade level by the end of the year, the district kind of sees that and is like, oh, the teacher really didn't do anything for them. And that's definitely not what it should be based off of. And I feel like the teacher definitely kind of gets punished for that when she shouldn't, because she made these students go from a third grade reading level to a fifth grade, which is outstanding. But because it's not where they needed to be in order to move on to middle school, because based off district standards, that she's not rewarded as she should be. And especially like with students going, having that standard put on them is very, like, what's the word? Demanding. And I know, like with ACT, like I was super like, oh my gosh, I have to get the score so I could get this scholarship to get into this school. I was very worried about my future. And honestly, like I ended up getting not the score I wanted, but a score that a lot of people were like, Caitlin, that's still really good. And I still ended up getting a scholarship, even though it wasn't the one I was aiming for. And now looking back, I was like, I really like busted my butt and like canceled on a lot of events and moments that kind of make a childhood. And I was focusing more on the future instead of the present. So I feel like the expectations that are set on students for these standardized tests is very demanding. And it kind of takes away from them being a student and being a kid still, because you're forcing them to focus more on their future when they need to focus on their present and bettering themselves now than in the future, which I still fully support. Like, make goals for your future, absolutely. But I like over like analyzed my goals for the future so much that I didn't really focus on where I was in the moment. So there's a lot of things that I regret from the past because I wasn't living in that moment due to the pressure of standardized tests for my future. Mm-hmm. And I do definitely believe that standardized tests do provide some sort of structure and goal setting, which I agree on. But at the same time, I feel like more formative and self-assessments should be distributed or administered to help teachers especially see what their students need more help on and what they need to focus more on in the future for future students, for areas that might need a little more explanation for their students' understanding. So
that's excellent. Yeah, we can't keep using these snapshots in time to be able to measure. And you're right. I'd love to follow up a little bit about the amount of pressure you put on yourself. Yes. There's a lot of increased anxiety and depression and stress for students these days. What are your thoughts on trying to help them to not feel that pressure that you did and to at least ameliorate it somehow to where it's not so oppressive that it's actually working against them?
So I kind of go along with what I had said about living more in the moment. Like, yes, there's times when you need to like really buckle down and focus on something coming up, like a test coming up, and like study. But honestly, if you start from the beginning and study a little bit, like every week, by the time you get to that test, like you won't have to lock yourself in your room for 3 hours and be like, I have to study. Because if you take the initiative at the beginning and are productive throughout the unit or the semester for finals or whatever, then you won't have to have that pressure at the end to be like, oh my gosh, like I don't know any of this. Like I have to learn it all tonight before the test tomorrow. So I would definitely suggest being productive about learning the content when your teacher teaches it to you, whether that be just reviewing your notes like every night for like 30 minutes before the next class or something like that. That definitely I found has helped me to kind of not get that anxiety, that test anxiety, because I'm like, you know what? Like, I know this, like I've learned this the whole class, the whole unit, I've got it down. And I've found like a lot of apps such as Quizlet has helped me really to understand and learn the content better. Cause like with Quizlet, you can do like tests and stuff using flashcards and they have like multiple choice, matching, true and false, write-in test. So that really helped me to like understand what I was learning. So I like would write it down. That's easy. You can write it down, you can memorize it, but until you fully understand what it's saying, mm-hmm. then you can't apply it to questions that you'll get on the test. Because a lot of test questions are application problems. And so if you don't understand the underlying like content, then you can't understand how to apply that content to a real world problem. So I would say definitely taking the initiative and using tools to help you understand your content better and starting when the unit first starts definitely helps to relieve some of that test anxiety once it gets to test time. So
that is excellent advice. And I know that there's many of us out there who listen to it and go, yeah, that's what I'm going to do, and still wind up at the very yeah. end going, oh my gosh.
Yes.
I'd like to go back to that question about what you would like for leaders and decision makers to know. But you're in this really interesting transitional phase from, you know, whereas I consider myself a lifelong learner, I'm not in that student role like you are. And you are bridging the gap between students and teachers. Yes. And so you just have a really unique perspective. So I would love to get any advice that you might have to people who are making decisions about new teachers, people who are making decisions about, you know, anything that you can see in education. And also, you know, maybe build on that. What's your advice to students as they look at teachers? You know, sometimes they're not really looked at as real people per se. Yes. And maybe finding some words of wisdom to make that connection.
Yes. So speaking off of the first part of that question about like educators and like hiring teachers and stuff. So I know like one of the big things after COVID was subs and having enough subs. And I know a few of the states have done where they will hire veterans to sub for teachers. And like, yes, like that's great. Give them jobs. But they, when I'm a student going through classes specifically for teaching and they're pulling people who probably have little to none education experience, it's kind of like an ouch. Like then what am I doing? Like getting a major paying for this degree when you can just pull someone off the street, you know? Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of like backfired a little bit for us as students, because we're like, that's not really fair because we're paying for this education and they're getting paid for little to no experience. So I definitely would say, like, at least before you put them in a classroom, give them a couple classes, like teach them, like give them some experience with this is how, like if a student comes to you with this problem, this is how you address it. Because we've been through that. We've had a lot of that. A lot of that training, and especially teaching content to students. It's not just reading off a PowerPoint, because I know I don't learn that way. It's boring. Your students will fall asleep in class and they won't learn anything. So there's definitely a lot more that goes into relaying content to students. And if you have little to no experience or training in that area, then you're not going to be able to effectively sub for a teacher. So I definitely, that's kind of a topic that's kind of gotten under my skin a little bit, but I definitely support giving veterans and like people off the streets, like giving them jobs and opportunities. But I feel like if you're going to do that, you need to give them a little training before throwing them into a classroom, especially with middle school kids. Like middle school kids will do anything and everything to make your life a little struggle. So definitely giving them the proper training before throwing them in there, because their feelings can get hurt. I know.
Oh, yeah.
I've gotten many questions about how tall I am. Why am I taller than you? Like stuff like that. Are you a student? Like, no, I'm not. But yes, for sure. And kind of going off of your second part of your question about what would I like to tell students about teachers to kind of make them feel like a person? Honestly, I like how teachers at the beginning of the year will do like an about me PowerPoint and kind of show like, this is my life. I am a person outside of my job. These are my hobbies. This is what I love to do. This is my family. Like, this is who I like to spend most of my time around. When I'm not working, this is what I'm doing, kind of stuff like that. Cause that helped me kind of visualize who they are as a person instead of like, oh, they're my teacher of biology or something like that, you know? And I think also like I said, mentioned before, like TikTok, a lot of teachers go on there and they like do like day in my lives and stuff like that. And so they show like their day in a classroom and then they're like, I just got off work. I'm going to go do cycle bar or something. Like that shows like they like to do like activities and stuff after they work. And it kind of gives students a little opportunity to glimpse into what they like to do outside of the classroom, outside of when they're working and they're teaching. So I definitely think like kind of being open to your students in a professional way. There's definitely a fine line there between being professional and being a little unprofessional with your students, but definitely building those connections and like being open to them enough. Like if they have questions that are appropriate, like about your life, like don't be like, I'm a mysterious person. Like you can't get to know me. Like, cause that's not going to help you connect to them. Cause if they can't connect to you, what makes you think that they're going to want to learn from you? And so like that's making that connection with them and being open to them and letting them know that you are a person too, and not just like a robot that teaches the same content every year to different students. I feel is really important to helping your students feel comfortable enough with you to like come to you if they have an issue. Like, because I would never go to a teacher that I'm like, I'm not, like, they're not open with me. Why would I be open with them?
It's about relationships. Yeah.
Yes. And that's like what I said, our middle school classes have really taught us that like relationships are the most important in the classroom over honestly teaching the content, because if your students don't trust you, they are not going to learn from you. And therefore you're just going to be blowing air out of your mouth. Like you're just going to be speaking to a brick wall. So yes, definitely being open to your students so that your students know that you are a person is definitely important.
Okay. I'm going to wrap with an extension about your comment and frustration about substitute teachers, because I actually just have been going through the process of applying to be a substitute teacher because I had so many friends that said, my God, we're just dying for subs. It's please help. And I have some flexibility in my schedule, but that lack of any type of training was what really struck me. The guidance that we were given really has a whole lot more to do with the administration of, you know, how you interact with systems and who you check in with and how you apply for the jobs and et cetera, et cetera. So I found myself turning to YouTube to try to find, you know, what do you do as a sub? And so knowing that there are all these people out there who are going in trying to do a decent job, what would your advice be to a substitute teacher?
I would say to definitely learn as much as you can before you get into the classroom, doing trainings. Because I know you can apply for subbing licenses and you have to take a few classes in order to get that license. And I've actually gotten the advice that during student teaching, before you student teach, to go ahead and get your subbing license the summer before. So then if your teacher is out, then you can sub for your class while making money, because substitute or student teaching, you make no money and it's like a boring job. So I was like, I'm probably going to do
that. That's a good idea. Yeah.
Yes. But I would definitely suggest to anyone who's even thinking about like going through the process to definitely take those classes and get that license, because honestly, it's going to teach you what you need to know before you step into a classroom, because anyone can probably think like, oh, it's just kids. Like, I can deal with them.
No, teaching is a skill.
Yes. And especially middle and high school. High school, I will not ever teach high school, because the high schoolers I feel are worse than middle schoolers. That's just a personal preference. But yes, high schoolers, there's a lot of struggle with getting them to actually want to do something, showing them that there is a reason why we're assigning this assignment. There is a reason why I'm giving you homework. There is a reason for this video that I'm making you watch. Definitely getting them involved is going to be hard. And I feel like at least some trainings or classes or even YouTube videos, like you said, really helps you in kind of learning how to professionally and successfully handle those situations. And problem solving for sure would be a big part of that as well. So definitely getting the proper training before getting into the classroom is very important.
Well, excellent, excellent note to end on. Caitlin, I really appreciate you taking the time and giving us a little insight into the budding professional that you are and what that pathway has been like for you. Yes, so I appreciate it greatly. And we'll, I guess, thank you once again.
Thank you so much for the invitation.
You bet. Take care.
You as well.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Education Perspectives. Feel free to share your thoughts on our Facebook page. Let us know which education perspectives you would like to hear or share. Please subscribe and share with your friends.